little Red Sox talking a quick update. They're coming back a little bit against the A's, 6-4 now. Oakland in the lead in this one. To talk more about the Red Sox, we're joined by our friend Sean McAdam of MassLive.com. Hello there, Sean.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How was your vacation last week?
Well, being that it was spent in the great state of Maine, as it always is, it was, of course, fabulous.
I'm so glad to hear that. You're back at it this week. And the Red Sox, in many ways, picking up where they left off right before the All-Star break, playing some pretty good baseball and getting themselves right back into the midst of the playoff picture.
Yeah, it's getting interesting. You know, so much has been focused on the trade deadline, which is, you know, now less than 2 weeks away, and would they sell or buy, and how close to a playoff spot would they have to be more aggressive. But, you know, while that debate is being had, you know, they've had themselves a pretty good 2 weeks here. In fact, they have among the best record in baseball in the last 3 weeks or so, and we'll see where that takes them.
And all that happening, too, while we're seeing some weaknesses in other American League East teams. The Yankees have dropped down to last place. They're pretty punchless without Aaron Judge. Tampa Bay had a 7-game losing streak just before the All-Star break. And, boy, it's throw them all in a hat about now. The Red Sox, who were for so long 12, 15 games out of first, back within 8 and very much in the middle of things.
Yeah, in fact, the Orioles have overtaken the Rays now today in the standings, and you're right, it has gotten tighter from top to bottom. It wasn't long ago in the first couple of months of the season where it seemed like the Rays were going to run away with the title and leave everybody else fighting for a wild card spot, and now they've been caught, and all five teams are kind of bunched up to the point where they're all several games over 500, even at the bottom. And, you know, the ultimate lesson is of course, that at maximum, you could have four teams from the AL East. I think it's probably more likely that you have three, with two wild cards coming from the East and then one probably from the West, from among the Houston and Texas race there. But, hey, at least it makes it interesting, which is, of course, part of the reason that baseball went to the expanded playoff format, keep more teams in the running. You can argue that all it takes now to be in the wild card chase is to have a winning record, but nonetheless, that's what the math shows us.
And the Red Sox have done all this with some pretty gaping holes in the rotation, and sometimes the opener works, sometimes not. Explain to me, Sean, is it psychology? What is it that allows Nick Pivetta to be so good in this role he's in lately with a performance for the ages the other night, a record 13 strikeouts and 6 innings of relief, no hits. And I'm thinking, why don't they just start him? But he didn't have that level of success as a starter.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to explain, whether it's routine, whether it's having more time to warm up, whether it's not facing the top of the order necessarily right away in your first inning, as you are unlikely to do when you come in the second, third, or fourth inning. But whatever it is, and you know, we should temper that accomplishment from the other night because of the quality of the opposition.
Right.
15 strikeouts in 6 innings, I think, were at least partly due to who they were facing, the A's. But, you know, look, it's a major league team, and this is not a one-off for Pivetta. He's actually performed quite well in that role. I'm not sure if you could isolate exactly why that's the case, but certainly they don't have any incentive to change that up now that they're getting real production from him.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. How long can they go like this, though, with these openers? Joe Jakes certainly didn't get the job done last night. What's the next opportunity for a starter to rejoin the rotation?
Yeah, that's a hard one to figure out at this point, Rich. We do know that Chris Sale is ramping up, that he had a bullpen session yesterday, that there's going to be another one on Saturday. but he is still probably a week and a half to 2 weeks away from even going out on a rehab assignment. He'll need two live BPs after his second bullpen, so that's going to take some time, and we're going to be well into August before he's back. It's probably a pretty quick race between, I would say, Whitlock and Hauk. And even though Hauk has been out longer, there isn't the danger of anything happening with his arm. Whitlock has been out, of course, because of some elbow inflammation, so I suspect they'll be a little more careful with him and not rush him back too soon. So probably one of those two, and you just wonder, as you were, how long you can get by when you don't have a dedicated starter for 40% of your game. And that's really where they are now. The last two nights they had openers and try to kind of get to the finish line with bullpen games, but I think that wreaks havoc on your staff. It leaves you a little thin for other days on an afternoon like this when Bayo hasn't been sharp and he's done after four innings. You've got to get five more innings from your bullpen today, coming on the heels of two bullpen games the last two nights. So you're asking for trouble the more you do it and the longer you try to go with that setup, but it would seem that they don't have a lot of other internal options either.
Will they bring Corey Kluber back at some point, and what will his role be if he does return?
Yeah, he's supposed to, I think, have a rehab start on Friday, having dealt with some shoulder inflammation. So I would expect that he would need two, if not three, to build up to get him to where he could give you five or six innings. But remember, he was languishing in the bullpen as kind of a low-leverage guy in games they were either up big or down big. And whether they'd want to put him back in the rotation, given his level of production, is something that they're probably still grappling with.
You mentioned the trade deadline, like a couple of weeks away now, and unless there's a long losing streak, it would seem that they're certainly not going to be sellers. I don't know that we'll see them make a huge move along the way, but they do have some extra guys in some spots, and the biggest one, obviously, is Adam Duvall, because they want to get playing time for Jared Duran. Is there much of a market for Duvall?
I would think so. You know, this is a guy who's hit 30 homers several times in the big leagues. He's won a gold glove in the outfield. He's even in center field, even if he's far from a gold glover there, he's certainly adequate. And there could be teams that would certainly find a room for him either in a corner outfield spot, or perhaps some team would like him as DH for a right-handed power bat. I still think it's more likely that they're going to have to give up some prospects to get what they need. But I also think they're going to be relatively modest in terms of what they're in search of at the deadline. Even if they buy, I think they would be happy to come away with a back-end starter and maybe a seventh-inning right-hand bullpen option. You know, those aren't going to be very costly necessarily, but it will require more than Adam Duvall, who's going to be a rental. And while he might have some appeal to a number of teams, it isn't necessarily going to get you the two arms that you need. I would think they would have to dip into the prospect pool, but they certainly are not going to be in a position where they have to give up one of their top 10 guys.
Well, it would seem to. We're seeing a lot of signs here that their faith in Tristan Casas is beginning to be rewarded a little bit, up to 236 as of this afternoon.
Yeah, and that batting average is a little deceiving because he started out below 200 for a long stretch of the season. He's got a on-base percentage that's much higher than that because he's not afraid to take his walks, as we've seen. And I think a key for him is also he's starting to really drive the ball with whatever it is, 11, 12 home runs at this point. I think they're still careful with him in terms of exposing him to too many lefties. Today, for instance, they've got Justin Turner playing first, and he's given them another home run as he extends his hitting streak to, I think, 15 games at this point. So it's not as if Katsas is going to be, you know, 150 game solution at first base, but he's obviously a pretty important guy here in the middle of the lineup going forward.
Turner has been such a great addition to the team, both on the field and in the clubhouse. Is that a one-year contract, or is he back next year?
It's kind of a complicated player option where it effectively means he will be back, because it would not make sense for him to not have that, but not pick up that option and come back. But by all accounts, despite being a guy who is a Southern California native and played 10 years with the Dodgers, he's adapted pretty well here. He enjoys Boston. I think he likes the passion that comes with playing here. So he's as good as coming back at this point, I would think.
And Kenley Jansen signed to a two-year deal, and it raised a few eyebrows because a lot of teams don't spend the big bucks on a closer anymore. But, boy, he's done a great job, and it's really not just solidified the bullpen, but clarified everybody else's role.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rich. He really has given them some stability back there that they really haven't had since Craig Kimbrell was more on his game during the 2018 season. As we got closer to the postseason and into October that year, he was less of a certain thing. But Jansen gives them that. They'd run through so many options from Workman to Barnes and trying different guys. To know that when you're leading by one, two, or three runs heading into the ninth inning, there's a guy who has successfully closed it out 410 or so times in his career gives not only the manager but everybody on the team, I think, a little bit of confidence that you know that 9 times out of 10 that lead is going to be secured. It did look like a bit of an overpay at the time, and there are people, you know, who still debate the importance or value of having one guy necessarily dedicated to that role, but I think, as you pointed out, just having everyone lined up and knowing who's going to have the ball in a late game situation where you're leading in a fairly close game, that's not only locked down the ninth, but it's allowed Martin to take over the eighth and makes for easier bullpen management for Dave Bush and Alex Cora.
Now, of course, they've got some tough games coming up after this series with the A's, and then the underperforming Mets, but after that they've got the Braves and the Giants in back-to-back series, the Mariners, who are fighting to get into playoff contention, the Blue Jays, before they have a decent stretch against the Royals and the Tigers. But overall, for the rest of the season, whatever that may be, how does the schedule look for them? Is it a bit more favorable than it is for other American League East competitors?
You know, Rich, I can't say that I've studied what others are going to be facing. But I think, in general, we can say this. Because, as we noted earlier in the conversation, once you get to 500, you're a de facto playoff team, or at least a playoff contender. And with all five teams in the East, plus the top two teams in the Central, although I think the Red Sox are now done with both Cleveland and Minnesota, and then you've got Houston and Texas and Seattle out there. So for the most part, you know, you can expect to be playing a team around 500 far more often than not. And that's going to bring with it its own challenges. You talked about a couple of spots in the schedule where it gets a little easier and you get to beat up on Kansas City or Detroit or other teams that are struggling over in the National League with the increased interleague portion of the schedule. So the fact of the matter is that you've got to keep winning series regardless of opponent. You know, earlier in the year, the Red Sox were losing to teams that they shouldn't have been, like the Cardinals and Rockies and some others, and then going a combined 12-1 against the Yankees and Blue Jays. So there hasn't been a lot of rhyme or reason to it. I suspect some of that might continue, and the easiest way to handle it is just to try to win 2 out of 3 as much as you can.
6-4, they trail Oakland right now in the top of the sixth inning, getaway day out at the Coliseum. Sean McAdam, great as always to talk with you. Thanks for checking in with us, and we'll talk to you again before too long.
Look forward to it, Rich. Thanks.
Sean McAdam of MassLive.com here on Downtown.